Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, what a year it has been. When I take a look back, the only consistent thing I can think about this year has been change. So, really honing in on the payments industry, what has changed from a consumer behavior standpoint? Do we still continue to see growth in the same behaviors that we did last year? Or are there new and emerging trends starting to take root? Well, luckily, I'm joined by Tom Pierce, who is the SVP and Chief Marketing Officer at PSCU, Norm Patrick, who is the Vice President of the Advisor Plus Consulting at PSCU, and Sarah Grotta, who is the Director of the Debit and Alternative Products Advisory Service at Mercator Advisor Group, to unpack PSCU's fourth annual ION Payment Study. And if you are looking for access to this document, we'll make sure that we provide you a way to download the document in the companion article on paymentsjournal.com. So there's certainly a lot of data and insight to unpack on today's episode. So without any further delays, let's start the show.
Absolute pleasure to have you on today's episode. And I'm really excited about this episode because we're going to be doing a deep dive into PSCU's ION Payment Study. Always a very fantastic study to get our hands on and dive deep into. So Tom, let's start with you here. From your perspective, what were really the key findings discovered in this year's PSCU ION Payment Studies? And perhaps maybe you could tie in if there were any new or emerging payment trends that you were able to identify.
Thank you, Ryan. Yes, very excited to release our results for this show. This is our fourth annual payment study and the second one that we've produced after the start of the pandemic. So always interesting to be able to look at the adjusting perspectives and preferences from consumers and both members of credit unions and customers from their behaviors pre-pandemic to currently. And we've seen continued trends and some new concepts to share. Just as earlier, we did survey more than 1,750 credit union members and financial institution customers for this study. Did the survey late this summer, and then the actual white paper itself, which is available, was produced at the end of October. We did actually do some deep dives into about 10 states to see if there were distinctions and perspective differences between folks in those states that were maybe more opened up than others. So some pretty interesting statistics this year. So let me turn over to Norm to talk about our first key finding.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Yeah, the first key finding was one that's not really surprising these days around the fact that personalization is absolutely critical these days. When we think about how our behaviors and expectations have evolved over the past couple of years, thinking about the way we shop, purchase food, entertain ourselves, service and technology providers have really continued to step up their game and provide consumers with a highly personalized experience. And what I believe is becoming increasingly clear is that consumers want and expect personalization across all facets of their life. And really, financial services, that realm is no different at all. To that end, this year's study indicates nearly 8 out of 10 respondents either agree or completely agree that they want to do business with a financial institution that knows them personally. At the same time, credit unions continue to be viewed as a trusted partner, with the study indicating 91% of all credit union members believing that credit unions are great places to get advice and guidance on financial matters. Now, send over to Tom for mobile wallets, digital, and contactless.
Yeah, as we look at the digital space, obviously, when we did our study back in 2020, we saw some shift with the immediate impact of COVID. And it was interesting to look at the results this year and see as folks started to come out of the pandemic, and in many areas, did those behaviors and preferences stick? Well, they did. We've seen, in looking at mobile wallet usage, respondents reported using a mobile wallet at a 50% increase clip in our most recent study, up to over 20% using it in the past 60 days, and 30% of those saying they're using it at least a few times a month, which was fascinating. Why are they doing it? Because of convenience, they're easy to use and fast. And on the contactless side, we've seen that impact as well. We've seen growth amongst credit union members up 50% to nearly 36% of those using a contactless card at least a few times per week, and 2/3 using it at least a few times a month. And where are they using it? Well, they're using it most often at grocery stores, the large big box retailers, and then also when they're out to eat, particularly at fast food and fast casual restaurants. So, Norm, you want to cover our e-commerce perspective as well?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. On the e-commerce front, I mean, as you could imagine, e-commerce really continues to flourish with online shopping becoming very much routine in today's environment. In fact, this year's study indicated 91% of respondents shop online at least a few times per month. And within that, nearly 1/3 of respondents shop online at least once a week or more. We're also continuing to see ordering ahead for groceries and food pickup and delivery through a mobile app continuing to increase through the pandemic times and beyond. Now, when it comes down to payment choice preference on those online or mobile app type of purchases, surprisingly, we got some mixed results with that, with 42% indicating that they prefer to conduct those transactions with a credit card. 34% preferring that they do those transactions with a debit card. And even PayPal has gotten in there with a 13% preference level. And really, those numbers indicate that when it comes to e-commerce, there really is not a one-size-fits-all approach relative to payment preference.
You know, that is just an incredible amount of data that you've just unpacked there, some pretty interesting things. And I think from my perspective, I think the topic that you started to talk about, which was personalization, has a lot to do and is really much tied into the use of mobile and online capabilities, because I think mobile and online capabilities is a way to achieve personalization for credit unions and other financial institutions. So I think it's kind of interesting that we're seeing the surge in both of these items, because I do in fact think that they support each other. And I think personalization is going to be kind of a key word in 2022 for the payments industry in particular.
Yeah, and I'll certainly say when you're talking about the different payment types there, you're kind of going from the credit to debit and then kind of the 14% of PayPal. I found that to be certainly very interesting. And I'll be very curious to see next year's Ion payment study, particularly on the news that Amazon is going to be allowing people to be able to pay with Venmo. I'm curious to kind of see how that then changes the numbers on there. But diving a little bit further deeper into the study, one of the other areas that I'm always very fascinated by is just the generation differences in terms of different payment types and what people are more comfortable with and where we're seeing the growth among generations. So Norm, let's start with you here and pull out some of the key differences from the Ion Payments reports of the payment preferences among the different generations.
Yeah, sure, Ryan. And one of the first dimensions that we looked at generationally was COVID impacts relative to the economy. The study this year indicated that consumers continued to be very concerned about the lingering effects of COVID on the economy. And diving in a little bit further on that, there's been significant direct impact on the survey respondents themselves. In fact, 31% of the respondents reported having experienced a job loss, furlough, or reduced pay or hours, you know, just due to the pandemic in itself. So a lot of that impact has been there. Now, when you look at the level of consumer angst amongst the generations, there really wasn't a whole lot of difference, honestly. Depending on the age segment that we're looking at, between 7 and 8 out of 10 consumers expressed that they were worried about the economy as a result of COVID. And when you break it down into those age segments, really the older millennials, being 33 to 40 years old and higher, including Gen X and boomers, those all came in around 8 to 10 or 80%, whereas the younger millennials and Gen Z came in the lower 70s. So again, when you look at it across all of those age segments, everybody seems to be having continued concerns about the economy post-pandemic. Tom, let's take a look at emerging payments.
Thanks, Norm. Yes, each year we try to take a deeper dive into a couple of newer areas within the Ion Payment Study. Last year, we really focused on contactless, knowing that that was going to be a significant shift with for the clean type of payments at the point of sale. And this year, we really tried to look at two new areas from a generational approach. One is the concept of course, buy now, pay later, and installment payments, which has had a great deal of coverage out there in the industry. And then the second on cryptocurrency preferences and utilization. So first, from a buy now, pay later perspective, we had over 60% of respondents for those that know their financial institution offers the services say they've used it. But still, about a third of folks are not sure if their institution offers installment payments or buy now, pay later. The strongest interest in this was amongst the younger demographic folks. So Gen Z, over 40% of folks say they would be more likely to use an installment payment option if it was offered by their FI. And nearly 35, 36% of both the younger and older millennial groups. So definitely stronger interest in the younger demographics for this type of payment offering from the financial institution. And then we know crypto is a hot topic. In fact, it was just announced that $700 million investment from crypto.com to rename the Staples Center out in Los Angeles. So it's a hot topic that's become mainstream. And it was a very interesting results, at least it surprised me in terms of the number of folks in the different generations that reported that they were either currently hold or have invested in cryptocurrency in the past. So and that sweet spot was really in the older millennial group. Over 40% of older millennials, and these are folks 33 to 40, say they either have invested in or held cryptocurrency. So that's pretty strong number, over 4 in 10. Strong numbers, almost 40% in the younger millennial group, and then about a quarter of the Generation Z folks. Little less interest so far, the older generations, only 5% of the boomer plus. But clearly this is a topic that credit unions and banks are going to need to look to provide their customers and members with more information, adequately either hold or monitor their holdings in crypto through their financial institutions.
Yeah, going back to the topic of buy now, pay later, I think that's just a fascinating product. It got legs so very quickly. And I guess it shouldn't be a surprise. It's how to make purchases without interest. But I do spend some time talking to credit unions and banks about what do they do about this phenomenon? How do they participate in it? And certainly the most direct way is to offer a buy now, pay later solution themselves. But the other opportunity is to make sure that not just thinking about the upfront payment, but thinking about the repayments as well. And so how is it that a credit union can make sure that their debit card or maybe their credit card is the repayment product of choice, and really trying to think about ways to get their payment solutions top of wallet through those three or four buy now, pay later repayments.
Yeah, and if I could, one of the areas I think that you touched upon there that's really a big interest of me is obviously the cryptocurrency space. And obviously you kind of talked in mention of Bitcoin. One of the things I think interesting kind of happening in that space is obviously the major update from Bitcoin and the new Taproot update that's going to allow for smart contracts. So I'm certainly curious to see how consumers are going to be reacting to that and how developers are going to react and how that kind of all trickles down. But Norm, I am curious. Based upon the study's findings, what are some of the key takeaways that credit unions can really leverage to better serve their members and then optimize their offerings as the payments landscape continues to evolve?
Yeah, sure, Ryan. Yeah, the first takeaway is really the going back to some comments we made earlier on personalization. It's really time to prepare for and deliver personalized offerings at a level that consumers are expecting these days. Now, let's recall a data point that I talked about earlier around personalization. 8 out of 10 consumers want to do business with an FI that knows them personally. And today, credit unions have multiple channels and touch points in place to consider when it comes to personalization. But the technology tools that are in play today and how credit unions are using them are largely around enabling users to start activities in one channel and then either continue or complete them through another channel. While that's wonderful, members have really been conditioned over time to expect a lot more of their credit union in terms of personalized experience. So with all that being said, now is really the time for credit unions to shift the narrative, and they need to determine how to leverage those channels along with this thing called data and use both the channels and the data to establish opti-channel engagement, really driven by analytics, which kind of would get credit unions closer to the level of a lot of the financial technology partners that they deal with in commerce all day long. Once we're able to integrate those processes and data across these available channels and optimizing those experience, it's going to enable credit unions to be more proactive and personalized with their messages and actions and really put them in a better position to satisfy consumers' needs relative to personal experiences that they experience in a lot of their daily interactions. So that's the first one. Off to Tom for our takeaway on digital.
Yeah, it seems pretty obvious, Norm, but obviously credit unions have to continue to focus on the digital space. It's not a differentiator anymore to be strong in digital, it's table stakes. Credit unions, because of some of those personalized experiences that you mentioned as the first key takeaway here, have to see these opportunities delivered through their digital engagement with their credit union. Obviously, when we moved into the pandemic period, the branches closed initially, and digital became the only way to engage with your institution. Well, of course, the branches have opened back up, but in most cases, those members aren't coming back at the pace that they were before. They're expecting that experience of the digital space to deliver the personalized approach that they want. And credit unions need to invest now in their mobile capabilities, in their contactless card capabilities, or else their members are going to turn to other options for their financial services. So Norm, take a look at unpack, let's say, the third takeaway we've seen in terms of pushing the credit union card first.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's pretty safe to say in today's world, it's really not enough any longer for credit unions simply to encourage members to use their cards at the point of sale. I mean, especially over the past roughly 20 to 24 months with the pandemic, we've seen digital payments continuing to accelerate. Consumers are shopping online via mobile app or through their laptops and through their tablets and phones a lot more. And at the same time, you have competitor financial institutions and even the fintechs that are fighting for transaction and market share. So really, credit unions need to continue to push to have their members use their credit union issued payment cards, whether it's debit, credit, or both, have that be their first option across all of their different channels and get those loaded into the wallets, whether they're in-store, online, or within the mobile app. At the same time, with all this e-commerce activity going on, fraud is still an issue, and credit unions need to keep on top of fraud trends and have the right tools and technologies in place to stop the fraudsters, or at least slow them down, and provide a seamless experience for members at the same time. And I just cannot stress enough really the need to have an effective balance between prudent risk management and at the same time having a very positive member experience, which can definitely work against each other if done the wrong way.
Norma, another question for you, if I may. Thinking about keeping cards top of wallet, are you seeing a lot of interest from your members around digital instant issuance as a means of making cards top of wallet?
Yes, in fact, we are, Sarah. And if you think about just experience overall and what we've learned over the past couple of years, questing a payment card and waiting several days for that card to be produced, embossed, and delivered, that really just does not fit the consumer mindset these days. So I think it's a much more attractive option to be able to digitally produce that payment credential and instantly push it off to the device so that the member can start transacting immediately. And it's a solution like that that definitely fits the mindset of consumers these days and the experiences they're coming across elsewhere. So definitely there is a lot of interest in that.
One thing, if I can, that Tom had spoken about that I really want to hone in on is that the digital nature is now table stakes. I think that, like, I couldn't agree more with that statement, mainly because when you take a look at the payments ecosystem as a whole, and you've kind of taken a look at it through the pandemic, I think before the pandemic, the payments ecosystem knew, hey, this is the direction that we are heading in, but like, hey, we've got some time here. We've got a couple of years. And what the pandemic has really done has just accelerated that. So everything that you thought that you had, hey, I've got that 3 to 5 year span to get to and kind of take our time for, it's no. It has been condensed now to that you kind of had those 18 months to get ready and get up to speed. And as Tom said, it is now table stakes. It has to be implemented now. But with that kind of being said, Tom, before we wrap things up, is there anything else that in this study that you'd like to call out for our audience here today?
Thank you, Ryan. So as we look at the study, again, the IM payment study with us doing this for a fourth year, it's really great to see the trends through the last few years in terms of credit union members and bank customers' preferences, and we're able to dive deep into some of these generational aspects of things. But what we've been able to also produce at PSCU on a monthly basis to really give our credit unions true insight into not just what their members are saying their preferences are, but how they're actually behaving with their debit and credit card usage or contactless card usage. We produce a monthly PSCU payments index that reports on all the data on a monthly basis so that we can see and report on the trends that have occurred back to 2019 through today and see what types of transactions have returned and what where transactions are still struggling, Each month, we also do a deep dive into a different topic. We're currently in the midst of a three-part series in the holiday space to look at spending projections and impacts there. So just would encourage folks to leverage both the annual information coming out of the IM payment study, as well as these monthly PSU Payments Index reports to drive some of their digital and other payment strategy efforts.
Awesome. Well, I think we'll end it on that fantastic note there. So Tom, Norm, Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time today for diving deep into this ION payment study. And we'll make sure that we provide a link or a way for our audience to be able to access the ION payment study in the article below on paymentjournal.com. So certainly be sure to check that out. So again, Tom, Norm, Sarah, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it and hope to have you back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.